Well, I've given it the title, so it may be wrong, but as I understand it, it's about Jesus forming a community. And where the climax will be next week. Thou art Peter, and upon this rock I will build my church. We won't get to that to this week, but we'll get right up to it. So in this part we're about to look at, Jesus is really, or Matthew, I suppose, directly, is looking at what's different between the leaders of the Jewish community, we'll call him the scribes and Pharisees, and the kind of community that Jesus wanted to form. What can we learn? What mistakes can we avoid? What's the spirit of this community have to be? We've just seen it'll have to be something to do with compassion. Jesus had compassion on the crowd. It'll have to be something to do with reliance on God and not on our own systems or theology or moral accuracy or human traditional dogmas, you know, beautiful as they all are, they're not God. So they're structures to help us, but it'll have to be, we'll have to all learn to be like a child, totally dependent on God, and cry out for love so that our heart is open to receive it. Well, now more precisely, we focus in on the problems of the Jewish leadership, speaking generally, at the time of Jesus, and in that Jewish community at Antioch that eventually excommunicated their Christian brothers and sisters. So, Pharisees and scribes, so here are the heavies, they're coming in, came to Jesus from Jerusalem. He's up in Galilee. They've come from the headquarters. And they said, why do your disciples break the tradition of the elders? And how do they show that they break that? Wait for this incredibly important matter. They don't wash their hands before they eat. Jesus answered them, and why do you break the commandment of God for the sake of your tradition? This is love. This is, what do they call it, tough love? This is holding a mirror up to nature, to use Shakespeare's terms. This is saying what they're doing, direct. With compassion, no doubt, but he's not fiddling with the truth. Why do you break the commandment of God for the sake of your tradition? God said, says Jesus, honour your father and your mother. Exodus 20, verse 12, if you want the text. And God says, whoever speaks evil of father or mother must surely die. Next chapter of Exodus. But you say that whoever tells his father or mother, whatever support you might have from me is given to God. It sounds wonderful, doesn't it? And pious and heroic. Then the person needn't honour their father. I've got all this money and I'm 42. I'm 58 if you want my story, but this is the eye of my discussion. So I'm 42 in imagination and I've got all this money and my aging father or something needs it. And everyone around in this society, of course you give it to your family. So I consecrate it to God. God, I give all my money to you and I'll always use it as you direct me. And God doesn't come to me in a vision and say, give it to your father. Say, oh, look, Dad, I'd love to give it to you, but I've kind of consecrated it to God, really. And that gets out of the problem, apparently. So for the, that's one example, no, there are hundreds. For the sake of your tradition, you make void the word of God. You're avoiding the truth with pious talk. You hypocrites. Isaiah prophesied rightly about you when he said, and Jesus quotes here Isaiah 29:13, this people honours me with their lips, but their hearts are far from me. In vain do they worship me, teaching human precepts as doctrines. Well, that's an extraordinarily common problem. I mean, every church does it, I'm sure. Every priest does it from every pulpit. It's hard to avoid sorting out the reality of God's will from the human, however beautiful, crustaceans of history. And, you know, making that discernment is an immensely delicate task, and we all make mistakes. But Jesus is telling us, for heaven's sake, get your heart in order. And then at least if you make mistakes, you won't make them heavy. You'll be admitting you're wrong, or you'll be faulty, or you're understanding and all that. We can live with all that. But when someone gets up and gives a thing off like they've just said, about breaking the tradition and all that, let's get our heart and really want God with our heart. And so Jesus is obviously a spirituality of the heart. It affects behaviour, of course, but it's not something you can work out on a piece of paper and organise just out there. It has to come from the heart, or we'll end up teaching human things as doctrines while our heart is actually far from God. Earlier in Matthew chapter 5 verse 20 in the Sermon on the Mount, Jesus said, and you'll recall this, unless your righteousness exceeds that of the scribes and Pharisees, you'll never enter the kingdom of heaven. Well, here it is coming here again. Another psalm which says much the same as Isaiah 29 is Psalm 78, verse 36. Common enough theme. They flattered him with their mouths, but they lied to him with their tongues. Their heart wasn't steadfast towards him. They were not true to his covenant. Everyone here in this church last Sunday, and there were a lot of us here over the four masses, said, we believe in one God. We all said it. I said it. If you were there, you said it. And yet, well, I have to say to myself, you have to say to yourself, if I believe in one God, that's my mouth saying that, if I believe in one God with my heart, you will know that that's true, because I will treat you with incredible respect, won't I? Because the God I'm talking about created you and loves you. I might have to correct you, I might have to oppose you, I might have to stand against you on many issues, like Jesus stands against the Pharisees, but I will always respect you. If I don't respect you, and I say I believe in one God, I am a liar, aren't I? And all these monotheists throughout the world, we're learning about Sudan from our beautiful people on the weekend, and next Saturday again, all these monotheists that go around massacring people of a different religious belief because they believe in one God, whether they be crusaders or whether they be Muslim fundamentalists or whether they be American evangelists, I don't care whether they're Uncle Toby's or somebody else. But the facts are still the same. To hurt another person, to destroy another person in God's name is utter hypocrisy. So here we have Jesus the teacher. He calls the crowd to him, everybody. This is Jesus, what he wants to say about what's the essence of his church he's about to set up. He called the crowd to him. He said, listen, understand. It's not what goes into the mouth that defiles you. It's what comes out of your mouth that defiles. It It's not the kind of food you eat with unwashed hands. See, that's the problem, isn't it? So you haven't washed your hands, your food may be defiled and you've eaten it, and you may become impure and can't go to the temple and sacrifice because you've eaten the wrong kind of food with unwashed hands against the law of God. And Jesus says, for God's sake, what it defiles you is what comes out of your mouth. So the disciples approached Jesus and said to him, hey, mate, do you know the Pharisees took offense when they heard what you said? They're helpful, aren't they? As though Jesus hadn't noticed. But do you realize that you're kind of putting these offside? And they're pretty important people. Don't you know who you're talking to, Jesus? They took offense. And Jesus said, every plant that my heavenly Father has not planted will be uprooted. Let them alone. Leave them be. They're blind guides of the blind. And if one blind person guides another, they'll both fall into the pit. Later on in Matthew, that's only in Matthew, by the way, but later on in Matthew we'll see that qualified in certain ways. So it's not, Jesus doesn't always say one thing and that's all of the truth to be said. There are other aspects of this to be made, but the point, I think, is surely clear enough. Peter said, would you explain this saying, this parable to us? Peter's coming to the fore again and again in this story. Because we're talking about the church and the importance of Peter, as I'll do with you next week, in the early church is obvious right through the New Testament. I belong to a religious community which believes that importance of Peter as the symbolic unity, focal point of the church, of the one church, actually, providentially, is meant to continue in history. In fact, through the diocese where Peter died. And that's the Catholic position. Now, it can be argued, and wonderful people don't agree with that, so I'm not suggesting it's absolutely obvious, but that's been a long-standing, like 2,000-year-old thought and tradition. And here you have certainly in Matthew's Gospel the importance of Peter. Can't be underestimated. It was Peter that stepped out of the boat. It's Peter that says, explain this to us. And then Jesus said, are you also still without understanding? Don't even you understand? Don't you see that whatever goes into the mouth enters the stomach and goes out into the sewer? But what comes out of the mouth comes from the heart. And this is what defiles. For out of the heart come. And here we run through the Ten Commandments, those that apply to our relations with each other, slightly expanded, to get a list of seven, really. So there's a complete number of seven. Come evil intentions. Example, murder. Fifth commandment. Adultery, and Jesus adds, Matthew adds, fornication, spirit of sexually irresponsible behavior of any kind, really. Treats a person as an object or possession. Fornication. Theft. Seventh commandment. Now the eighth commandment. Bearing false witness, slander. These are what defiles a person. But to eat with unwashed hands does not defile. So let me take you on a small meditation now on the religion of the heart, the spirituality of the heart, which is an ancient Jewish tradition, and had the Pharisees been faithful to their own tradition, they would certainly have understood this. It seems that when Jesus was here, the leadership in Jerusalem was quite poor, as the leadership in any community can be poor at certain times of history, because this is any Jew, faithful Jew, of whom there are surely thousands, if not millions, would steadfastly believe this truth. Let me present some of the texts to you, and they're certainly at the heart of Jesus' understanding of Judaism and therefore of Christianity. Isaiah 29:13, we've done, I'll just read it again. These people draw near me with their mouths and honour me with their lips. Their hearts are far from me. Their worship of me is a human commandment learned by rote. Psalm 78:36. They flattered him with their mouths and they lied to him with their tongues. Their heart was not steadfast towards him. They were not true to his covenant. Hosea 6:6. God speaking, I long, I desire for steadfast love. That's what I want, not sacrifice. Okay, you can have sacrifice if you want to, but what I want is love. I want knowledge of God. That's what I prefer. Have your burnt offerings, but they're so irrelevant. I want you to know me and I want you to love, says God. Jeremiah chapter 6, verse 20. Of what use to me is frankincense that comes from Sheba, or sweet cane from a distant land? Your burnt offerings aren't acceptable. The sacrifices do not please me. For Amos, the earliest of the writing prophets, seek good and not evil so that you may live, and that Yahweh, God of hosts, may really be with you as you claim he is. Hate evil, love good, and maintain justice at the city gate. And the prophet screaming with anger, God's anger at this community that are coming up and making all these sacrifices at the temple and doing all these rituals. Nothing wrong with them in themselves, but they're doing them all, but they're not fair dinkum. And so God bursts through this angry man and he says, I hate and despise your feasts. I take no pleasure in your solemn offerings. I reject your oblations. This is heavy. And I refuse to look at your sacrifices of fattened cattle. Let me have no more of the din of your chanting. Turn the bloody machine off. I don't want your strumming on harps. Let justice flow like water and integrity like an unfailing stream. And if, like Jesus, we hunger and thirst for justice, then let us express that with strumming harps and chanting and sacrifice and feasts and oblations and candles and dancing, but they are all to be celebrations of a communion with God. They are to be expressions of the heart, not substitutes for the heart's communion with God and doing the will of God. Isaiah 1:10-17. Actually, the last of the writings of Isaiah. This concludes the book of the first Isaiah, of the prophet Isaiah. After 40 years of prophesying, this is how he concludes his prophecy, with an introduction at the beginning. So I guess his final word is here. This one Isaiah, surely one of the greatest of the prophets, and writes with amazing poetry and love. He says, hear the word of the Lord, you rulers of Sodom. And Sodom is Jerusalem. Sodom is, well, Henley Beach, if we're not careful. Sodom is where we are. The multitude of your sacrifices, what are they to me, says the Lord? I've more than enough of burnt offerings and rams and fat of fattened animals. When you come to appear before me, who asked you to? This trampling of my courts. Stop bringing meaningless offerings. Your incense is detestable to me. New moons, Sabbaths, convocations, I can't bear your evil assemblies. They become a burden to me. When you spread out your hands in prayer, I'll hide my eyes from you. I won't listen. Your hands are full of blood. That's the point. It's awful, isn't it? But it's so strong. Hands are full of blood. Wash, make yourselves clean, take your evil deeds out of my sight, stop doing wrong, learn to do right, seek justice, help the oppressed, defend the cause of the fatherless and plead the cause of the widow. And with those words, Isaiah leaves the stage of history. But one of his disciples, 2 centuries later, or a group of his disciples, when the people came back from exile, added this to the Isaiah scroll. And you'll see how fitting it is for the heritage of this wonderful prophet. It was the reading of last Sunday's Mass, 2 days ago Mass, so I'll just run it past you again. Isaiah chapter 58. Shout for all you're worth. Raise your voice like a trumpet. Proclaim their faults to my people, their sins to the house of Jacob. And you can see this is not a hell and fire and brimstone sermon, useless as such things are, except to induce fear. This is a clear naming of sin, which is always important, isn't it? And by the way, little writer, please don't lose track of the first rite of reconciliation. Don't be satisfied with the third rite. It's a beautiful sacrament, the third rite, but it's no substitute for naming your sin humbly and letting God, the doctor, the physician of your soul, touch that wound, that precise wound, and heal it. I'm sure you know that, but, you know, don't go back to what we used to do and run out all the blooming washing list every week. But there's a place and a time for humbly, and I don't think it should be, you know, don't leave it for too long, where you get rusty and you don't know and the door falls off the car because you haven't attended to it, or the wheel falls off your life. Every now and then, Advent, Lent, you make your own mind up, but face your life and name your sin and take it to God in a sacrament. Back to this. Jesus, oh God, is saying to Isaiah, through the Isaiah disciples, tell their sins to the house of Jacob. And this is what their sins are. It might apply to me and you, it will in part. So let's listen and we'll conclude this meditation with this. These people, and look how beautiful they are firstly. They seek me day after day. Great. They long to know my ways. Can't do better than that. They're a good people. They're like a nation that wants to act with integrity and doesn't want to ignore the law of God. We're dealing with a committed group of people. They ask me for laws that are just and they long for God to draw near. So far, so good. And they say to God, why should we fast if you never see it? Why do penance if you never notice? Why send all those years of struggle my kids to a Catholic school and they never go to Mass? That is sad. If it's true, and it probably is in nearly every family I know, including my own. Why should we do all these things and God doesn't notice? God's answer: look, you oppress all your workmen. You strike the poor man with your fist. Fasting like yours today will never make your voice heard on high. Is that the sort of fast that pleases me? Says God. A truly penitential day for people, hanging a head like a reed, lying down on sackcloth and ashes. Is that what you call fasting? A day acceptable to Yahweh, to the Lord? Isn't this the sort of fast that pleases me? It's the Lord Yahweh who speaks. To break unjust fetters, to undo the thongs of the yoke. You see someone yoked, and you walk in, and you undo the thongs, and throw the saddle off and the yoke, and tell them to gallop into the bloomin' paddock. Share your bread with the hungry. Shelter the homeless poor. Clothe the person you see to be naked, and don't turn away from your own kin. Then, says Isaiah, says the prophets, disciples, then will your light shine like the dawn, and then your wound will be quickly healed. Your integrity will go before you and the glory of Yahweh behind. Cry then and God will say, will answer. Call and he'll say, I'm here. I'm here. Not up there where you're gazing, but down here with the prodigal, with the good Samaritan in the gutter. If you do away with the yoke and the clenched fist, the wicked word, if you give your bread to the hungry and relief to the oppressed, your light will rise in the darkness and your shadows will come like noon. The Lord will always guide you, giving you relief in desert places. You'll still be in a desert, like the hungry people of tonight's gospel, but he will give you relief there. He will give strength to your bones. And what a beautiful image to finish. You will be like a watered garden, like a spring of water whose waters never run dry. And so, a rather lengthy, I'll just take you through a couple more scenes, but that was a fairly lengthy meditation on the heart. On, as distinct from checking that we've done all the right things on the list that we find in a catechism or in a Bible or in a somewhere else. Check the list. The list is probably wise and it's probably worth a good check. But whatever the list, this is where we have to go and this is where we have to grow in our heart. And if we do, some of those texts will invite you and me into the religion that the Pharisees should have been living and that Jesus did live and ask his disciples.